Will join us, maybe Keith. But I think everybody is here. Elizabeth Sal, we didn't hear back from, so.
He might be at brain mapping. May be traveling.
Yeah. But we can start. It's been a while since I've been on one of these, and I do apologize. At the last time you had a conference call, I was participating in a review of similar type projects, and I think I learned a great deal about how reviewers see these types of consortium. And I think that we really need to consider how they're going to be looked at in terms of a consortium. And one of the primary things that people looked at was how projects interrelated. A project could get a very good scientific review, but if it failed to interrelate with the rest of the group, the other projects, it did not receive the best score possible in terms of the overall, whether it would be included in that consortium or not. So good science alone was not the key to getting a great score. Good science and interrelatedness with other projects in the consortium, which was what was really critical. And the other thing was how well projects had done in the progress in their previous grant period. So I think that there are two things that we need to consider when we consider renewing the consortium, as well as what people need to think about when they're considering what projects to include and how they can move their projects forward, and why the necessity of a consortium is needed, why the consortium is needed to move that project forward, and not as a simple standalone R01 dealing with fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. So I found it educational to be there, and hopefully as this process moves forward, I'll be able to provide more information or guidance in that regard. But two critical things were the interrelatedness of the projects and the progress of the projects, in addition to good science.
And how is the progress of the project identified? Always through publications?
That was a key factor, but as well as what people described in terms of their progress. I think there's an understanding that sometimes these things take a while to get off the ground, but there was some paper counting. So. And it came into the consideration. I think people tend to look at these as large budget items and want justifiable progress to justify those resources. So that's one item that I just wanted to mention. But I think we need to consider when we consider the types of projects that we want to move forward in the consortium, and where we're going. I think the other thing that came out is that, and I mentioned this on the basic science call, is that, and Laurie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we can, I believe, put in more projects than we know are going to be able to be funded. And hopefully let part of a review committee tell us what the best science is that we're proposing and the most interrelated projects. The last time we put in just enough projects to meet the budget cap, and everybody took big budget cuts in trying to do that, so the projects were not always well funded. But this time we can put in, I think, projects that we think are good science, interrelate, but worry less about the budget cap than we did previously. Laurie, is that your understanding?
That's my understanding.
To an extent.
Right. So we're not going to throw in 50 projects. We're going to throw in, first of all, I think we would look bad if we threw in projects that we didn't think were good.
Correct.
All right. So from an administrative and a scientific board point of view, the steering committee viewpoint, we have to have some type of culling process on the basis of science. If it's not good science, we're not going to submit it. But if it is good science, we don't need to cut projects prior to worrying about the budget cap. So we're going to put in the things and then worry about them later after the reviews are done. And that may also go, I think people have to put in reasonable budgets, but we're not going to be doing what we did the first time around where we had to go in and trim all these budgets so that we could come in under the $2.5 million cap.
We required that the first time.
Right, that was required the first time. And if you look at the administrative core, there was a budget for the entire consortium where the final figure in that bottom line came out to $2.5 million. I don't think we need to do that this time. The other thing is that I think the number of cores are going to be a minimum, an administrative core and an informatics core, and the rest of the money is going to go to scientific projects, even if a scientific project also provides core services. So if there's a brain imaging core, it needs to do science in addition to providing help with analysis to other sites doing brain imaging.
Ed, will that be reflected in the budget of that project?
Yes. You mean in terms of its providing core services?
Right.
Right. I mean,
they wouldn't be expected to provide core services within the, you know, fairly limited budget for a project.
Right. No, they would provide a reasonable budget to do or to carry out the specific aims that they are proposing or being charged with. Which is why I think we're only going to identify two projects as cores. And in fact, if the informatics core wanted to take on a project, in some realm, they could even propose that and keep everything as a UO1. Okay. Any questions so far?
Nope.
There's other news. I heard from Sandy Jacobson that they were not planning on participating in the renewal of the CIFSD. So if anyone was planning on utilizing that site for any reason, they need to adapt their proposal. See what other things came out of the basic science talk had. All right. So far, I think, and like I said, I've listened to parts of the last conference calls, but I haven't been involved in them. So if Michael, if you have comments, please feel free to interject them.
Yep.
But I think that there's a general feeling that we can include more basic science projects in the future. And I know that Michael's been in touch with individuals such as Kathy Sulik, who have expressed an interest in joining the consortium. And has some fairly new and interesting data that might fit in with both the facial imaging and brain imaging projects that are being proposed. Let's see, I'm just going down here. That I think in the last call that there was effort spent on the facial imaging core and how that could interrelate and be translational, including the animal model data that Feng Zhao has started to collect, and how those facial imaging data could interact with the brain imaging possibilities, and then how that could interact with behavior. So I think that there's an interrelatedness of basic science, clinical projects that go from the dysmorphology to the brain to behavior. And I think that that would sell pretty well. I just thought of something, and now it bypassed me again. Lack of sleep on my part. All right, so we're going to have a meeting July 16th and 17th, or 17th and 18th, in Washington. And at that meeting, what I think, we put together a preliminary agenda, and I'd like people to discuss the progress that they've made on their current U01 or U24, and what they want to try to propose for the next renewal, and to do that within a 15-minute time slot per project, and then to discuss how we can kind of start picking and choosing or modifying projects to make them more interrelated with other projects. And I think that's going to be really key to the success of a continued consortium, is to get the projects more online working together.
Ed, are the outside consultants going to be there for that?
Jim West will be there. Marty couldn't make it.
Okay.
And
how about, what's his name from Ohio?
I don't know if Joanne heard back from him or not.
Keith?
Yeah, Keith Yates.
He won't be able to attend either.
Okay.
Can we invite Kathy Sulik to come?
Sure.
And is there a way to pay for her?
Yeah, partially, I guess. We could come up with some funds to, you know.
Okay.
We'll talk about that. But, yeah, I definitely think she should be there.
Yeah, she provides some significant glue between the basic science and the clinical projects.
Right. I hope that Elizabeth Sal could be here today, because I think if Kathy does join, it adds up a step for doing brain imaging. And it's just a matter now of sites for brain imaging, where we can do them. Elizabeth has a project in L.A. that is not part of the consortium, and the kids have not been seen by Ken and the Dysmorphology Corps. But she has that ongoing. And I think that, you know, by having Ken see her patients or concurring with the diagnosis, that we can add that site in for the imaging data anyway. We have the imaging possibilities here in San Diego. The Jacobsons had been doing imaging in South Africa under a Fogarty grant.
Right.
And so we know that they have imaging capabilities in South Africa. I was just in Russia not too long ago, and imaging capabilities in Moscow are not going to be a possibility. But however, there are imaging capabilities in St. Petersburg and people who are interested in doing it there. And so we can consider whether we want to try to add a site if it meets a specific need. And we need to talk with Phil about trying to get imaging capabilities for the kids that he has in South Africa. And then I think we'd have some reasonable number of kids that could be imaged, a reasonable number of different sites where that imaging occurred. I think it, with the animal data and the human data, it fits in pretty well.
Yeah. TK is very interested in terms of the imaging of the kids that were part of the project that Ken and Phil and Luther and Jean had assessed in Wellington, you know, the older children that are there. And so establishing a link in terms of imaging those individuals. One possibility is using the same people at UCT. The other is using another facility. According to Dennis Vilhun, there is more than enough imaging capability in Cape Town now at more than one site. So So I think making that sort of connection. I haven't heard from Phil since he's been back, supposedly from South Africa, and he's not on the call, so I don't know where he is.
His uncle died, and he was at a funeral. I think he's back, but I don't know where he is for today.
Okay, but I think it would be interesting to find, you know, to basically, well, I think that has to be pursued. For sure that's going to come up, but I will assure you that at the meeting, TK is going to ask about that. So making some sort of connection over there would be appropriate.
Ken, should that be done through Dennis or through Phil?
That should be done through Phil.
All right.
However, Phil was meeting with some people related to, at the University of Stellenbosch, or at the Stellenbosch Medical School, where I know there is imaging capability also, which is distinct from that had been used by the Jacobsons. It really doesn't matter because the people there are independent.
Right.
We can use either facility, but the advantage of Stellenbosch is that it's closer to Wellington. So if you're talking about transporting individuals, it's much closer to go from Wellington to Stellenbosch than it is from Wellington to UCT.
Ken Jones, do you have any idea the number of kids that you're talking about in that first group of kids that you identify?
And the second group.
Wave one and wave two?
You mean affected kids or all kids?
Affected.
Yeah. In the first wave, we saw 1,000 children, and we got
42 per 1,000.
Yeah.
So you got 42.
Right. And in the second wave, I think it was up to 8,000.
You saw 8,000?
No, it was up. The affected was up to 8 per 1,000.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many we saw.
I think overall it was about 800 in that one.
And the rate was about 70 something per 1,000, right?
Right.
Yeah, close to 8 per 1,000.
And Ken, the third wave. How many? How old are they? When were they done?
They must be about 9.
Yeah, I think they're about. You mean the kids from the first wave are like 9 or 10 now?
No, they're older than that.
Older than that, they were what? First wave was done back in. What was it? 98.
And they were 6.
They were 6, so they'd be 14 now.
Okay. All right. I don't know about the third.
It was 2.
I think they just went back. This is Tina. I think. Ken, they just went back, Anna Suzanne and Matt went back and tried to relocate those families to give them feedback on the neuropsychological testing. So they should have some current numbers of how many of them they were able to actually find.
All right. Well, I think that would, if say you really saw 1,000 kids and 800 kids, and given the rates that are reported in those papers, you'll certainly have enough to do any type of imaging that you want. So I think that is certainly something that needs to be pursued. How do you think TK or reviewers are going to feel about adding a site if we wanted to add in St. Petersburg? Ken, Warren?
I think you have to justify dropping certain sites and adding. So if you're going to drop some sites, you have to say why you're not going to use those sites, and then give the rationale for why you're adding sites.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the issue in terms of St. Petersburg also is that you really don't have an FAS population established there yet?
Not that Ken has seen. There's there's a project that was ongoing there through Fogarty, and John Mulvihill is the dysmorphologist, and Ken, you think he's reasonably good?
John is a wonderful guy who's a clinical geneticist who has made his name on cancer, and I don't know whether John's a good dysmorphologist. I don't know. I don't know him as a dysmorphologist. He doesn't go to dysmorphology meetings.
Okay.
I consider him a good friend of mine, and I could
work with. All right.
Find out what he knows about diagnosing FAS.
But he's been there and presumably trained some pediatricians, and they presumably have reasonably high rates, and it's a smaller, more workable community than Moscow is, and they have a 2.4 Tesla magnet that's available. So plenty of enough imaging power to do the things that Elizabeth does. And, you know, the Moscow orphanage study, why it was has a great cohort of kids. It seems that we're having difficulty getting the data from them or getting people who are interested in pursuing it there. And we've talked to a few investigators about trying to establish a rapport and taking over the project, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm about that. Anyone want to correct me? Ken, you were just there talking to them.
No, I think your statement is fair enough, Ed. The tragedy that we would be losing that population because they're really just a really wonderful population. There's a huge number of affected kids there, and it's just
and you know, all the kids were seen by you, and behavioral data was collected on some proportion of them, and it's a shame that it hasn't worked out better than it did, and it's for a variety of reasons, which I guess brings up another item that I want to just discuss real quickly. And one of the specific aims in this consortium was to identify or help to identify a behavioral profile or profiles for kids with FASD. And lots of behavioral data has been this data, however, we don't know what it shows us yet. We don't know what that data shows us yet, and we don't have the data uploaded so that we start to analyze it. And I think that if we're going to propose additional behavioral studies in the renewal, that we can't go in and simply say we want to do more of the same. We have to show that we've made progress, and not only progress in terms of telling them how many kids we've tested at each of the various sites, but we have to be able to tell them something about a profile. What domains appear to be most affected, what domains appear to be spared. And to provide a rationale for narrowing down the type of tests that are done on these kids in trying to provide a better way to diagnose FASD. I hope I'm making sense on this. But unless we can provide them some results of what we've found already that are similar and different across sites and what domains are affected and not affected, I don't think there's a lot of reason to push, you know, lots of behavioral studies in this renewal, because I simply don't think they're going to just give us money to do more of the same. Any thoughts, concerns?
Ed, it's Michael. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that people stake you, they cut you a little slack on the first time, but when it comes to the renewal, you have to have shown something. If we don't have something to show, they're not going to fund it again.
Well, this is Ken. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of crazy to be, on the one hand, indicating that this is a behavioral teratogen, and on the other hand, not trying to find the behavioral phenotype of this behavioral teratogen. So I'm not proposing anything here, but it seems to me that to just flat out suggest that we shouldn't be looking, trying to develop better ways to look at behavior in this disorder and better understand the behavioral phenotype is, I don't want to jump to that quite yet.
Ken, I agree that that's a critical, important question. But in terms of the renewal, I'm just worried that they're going to say, well, what have you found so far so that you can help better define that profile?
Well, I think for one thing, in terms of behavioral issues, I'm not clearly not somebody who knows a lot about the behavioral aspects of this, but I think that behavioral aspects of this disorder in younger kids we've not had any attempt done to try to evaluate that. And I think that that's something as we strive to better understand and be able to diagnose this at an earlier and earlier age, which I think should be continued to be one of the focuses of this consortium. As we strive to do that, I think getting good neurobehavioral data in the first year to two of life is something that has not been approached.
Yeah, but again, that's kind of a new project. It's not more of the same.
All right.
And so I agree. It's just that we had four projects, I think, that were funded for this behavioral profile initially. And unless we can start to analyze those data and better define this profile, I'm not sure that a reviewer is going to be all that sympathetic.
Well,
that we have collected lots of data, but we don't have anything to show for it.
Well, could I ask, this is Ann, could I ask, what's the status of analyzing that data? I mean, where are we?
I can answer that. This is Sarah. We are working on with the Informatics Corps, they're working on the upload tool. The input tool has been ready for a little while, had some bugs, but we've worked those out. So people hopefully are entering data into the input tool, and my understanding is the upload tool will be ready time. I've been working on various analyses, you know, using the three sites that I have, but beyond that, and actually with Phil May's data too, so there have been a small number of things going, but not a huge amount.
This is Andy Aronson from the Informatics Corps. It's not clear to me how many more sites there are beyond the ones that Sarah's working with and Phil's working with that have data to submit. And I'm curious if there are people out there who, you know, are beyond those groups that are planning on submitting data.
Just the Jacobson's data.
Well, the Jacobson's data, and Phil has very, very limited data uploaded. So primarily it's simply the project from Sarah that has data available.
Does that include Finland?
Yes.
Well, it includes parts of the Finnish data.
The majority of the Finnish data.
Yeah. The Finnish contrast group won't be ready for uploading until at least August.
Okay. So what I'm... of the data we're going to be able to do analysis on, Sarah's actually started doing analysis on, and that same set of data is also what we've been doing our beta testing on the tool. You know, the note I saw from Kim yesterday is that it was essentially working. I think, you know, we're going to get one more pass from Kim, and I think this thing's going to be live, you know, tomorrow or the next day.
Okay. I mean, I hired a statistician to this for the summer to start analyzing these data, and you know, I think that the behavioral part is really very important, and it's one of the adhesions to the consortium, in that if we then can relate those behavioral to the facial dysmorphology or to the brain imaging, we've made very significant progress and an important contribution. But without those behavioral data, we're kind of sitting there saying, okay, well, all these things are a possibility. Maybe we have something, maybe we don't. And if we can get those data in and analyzed and relate it to these other domains, the spatial imaging, the dysmorphology, you know, I know that Ken has some really great ideas about the frontal lobes and the dysmorphic face. And to know that you could put the imaging, the dysmorphology together, and then relate those to executive functioning deficits and frontal lobe functioning, I think then we show that we really interrelate and we have a nice project. Any other comments? All right. Well, then, in the time remaining,
Ted.
Yeah.
This is Ken. I just would like to ask a question that's totally unrelated to the imaging and behavioral phenotype, et cetera. You talked, and I'm hopeful that Michael's still on the telephone. But
I'm here.
So you talked about Kathy Sulick's stuff as it relates to brain imaging and facial dysmorphology and facial imaging, et cetera. Are there other ways that you perceive, other than the imaging issues, that you perceive the animal data to be able to interact with the rest of the consortium? Specifically, is there anything related to intervention, treatment issues, those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that the basic science projects were looking at doing were to get involved in some intervention work and how effects from prenatal alcohol exposure might be mitigated, ways to antagonize those effects. And that would be a theme of some of the basic science projects.
Can they relate to the human data?
Well, it's hoping that we could come up and develop possible interventions that one could put into effect in a clinical population in a very not-so-time-consuming way. So it's not like a full clinical trial of a particular intervention, but some perhaps nutritional interventions that could be done in the animal models as well as in the humans.
So is that something the animal studies are going to be looking at or already have looked at?
Well, some of that work has already been done under other mechanisms, and it's something that the basic science group is looking into to include in a renewal type application.
Okay.
So I think that's a real possibility for translational work if some of the basic scientists can communicate to some of the people doing clinical projects and see what's available and how they could implement these.
Yeah. Well, other than nutritional type things and vitamins and that kind of thing, is there any possibility that in the near future we're going to be able to suggest in a proposal giving some kind of a non-vitamin, non-nutritional supplement to somebody to try to affect pregnancy outcome?
I can answer that, Ken. I think the answer is for a non-vitamin, non-nutritional component, there's just a very, very long process that you have to go through to establish safety, especially in a pregnant population.
Right.
So that anything that we come up with that looks promising in animals, you're probably looking at 5 years.
Yeah, that's,
at least.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Yeah. I think that one of the reasons to be excited about nutritional interventions, vitamins and choline and some of the other things that people are looking at is that you don't have to go through that same profile.
Right.
That there are opportunities to do that right off. I think one of the things that Kathy's work may help us with is that she has the ability through imaging to look at the effects of ethanol exposure at discrete times on development later on. And that has a natural provides a natural opportunity to also look at the effects of interventions, because she ends up with data that look very much like the imaging data that others are producing in humans, where you can look at many things at once instead of having to take the brains apart slice by slice and do all sorts of complicated morphometrics on slices. It gives her volumetric data, and structural imaging, as well as allowing you to follow white matter tracks. I can send you her slide. You'll get a sense of it. I don't have everything, but she's going to be showing this in one of the fast talks on Saturday, so that you should, if you're there, try to attend, and I think you'll get a sense of why some of us are excited about this particular work.
Are these postnatal or prenatal scans or ultrasounds?
Prenatal.
Prenatal. Okay.
So you can look at prenatal interventions, looking at prenatal endpoints.
But there's no reason why these can't be carried out, and I think they should be carried out into the postnatal animal.
Kathy is very early in this work, and some of this was really designed to establish the principle of doing this kind of imaging in small animals.
Right.
And she's just taken it into one of her models for looking at fetal alcohol.
So this is ultrasound, basically.
It's MRI.
MRI.
Yeah.
So are we talking then about, do you think there's capability in anywhere, be it South Africa or St. Petersburg, to do fetal MRI?
I don't necessarily think that the thing to do is the prenatal MRI. I think what she's doing is showing the feasibility of this and doing these 29 micron scans so she can get very, very good volumetric data. But that, and she's looking at it so she can track brain development, see delays versus changes.
Right.
I think that the utility is one of the utilities also is going to be doing similar type things in the postnatal animal where you can do the scans and then look at the behavior. I mean, you have to kill the animal to do these MRI scans. I mean, she's using fixed specimens, but once you have the techniques down to do the animal MRI and have a powerful enough magnet to do tiny enough sections, small enough sections, then you can do this the same way as you do it in the human, is that you track brain and behavior relationships. So it's just an important, you know.
I think it's very important as well. I'm just trying to see how sophisticated the scanning has to be in order to pick this thing up. For example, I'm thinking of Anne's postnatal ultrasound studies, and I'm assuming based upon what you're talking about with these very thin slices that ultrasound doesn't do this.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, this is...
You have postnatal and prenatal, potentially. And prenatal ultrasounds are being done. There's no question. I don't know whether they're being done in these places or not. But from the standpoint of the utility of it, you don't think that this fits in any way with the postnatal ultrasounds that Anne's been talking about. Is that correct? I'm trying to think of, again, integrating.
They're on different orders of magnitudes or asking different questions.
Okay.
You know, it's, so.
This is Fred. To the extent that both are studying volumetrics, they could be answering the same question, and I would gently and politely differ with Ed Riley about that. Ultrasounds certainly give you estimates of extents at a precision that's certainly less than Kathy Sulick's. But if the overall idea is a gentle regionalization of tissue loss, both projects could be speaking the same language. Now that's intended as a positive answer to Ken Warren's suggestion.
Okay.
Ken, are you at your computer?
No, I'm not.
Oh, all right. I'm going to send this to you. You'll look at it later and tell me what you think.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. We have a few minutes left. In terms of for the renewal, the projects and intervention so far would come from the basic science and animal project. It's too bad Phil's not on because we don't know the status of their intervention project in South Africa and whether that can whether they plan on continuing that or improving upon it in any way in the renewal. Is there a sense that more intervention projects or fewer intervention projects and different intervention projects so that we should be try to solicit those. And the other thing is that we have no prevention projects in the consortium, and whether or not we should try to solicit something in the line of prevention.
Well, in their silence, I'll say something. I think that the intervention projects, at least if I was looking at these things, I think the intervention issue is a critical issue. And if I think that to the extent that intervention projects could be added into virtually anywhere and anything we're doing, I think it's a very positive thing to do.
Yeah,
I'd like to speak to what Ken just said, and that's one reason we're hoping to not only collaborate on the neonatal ultrasound with Moscow and Ukraine and perhaps South Africa later. We also want to have another Seattle grouping, and because we do have available the PCAP program that Therese Grant runs, we do have an easier time following up children, and we have the capability of working with other groups to get early interventions measured and on the same babies that we have the neonatal ultrasound. You know, the work isn't all being done on the same grant, but we are working with groups in Seattle that are working on early intervention with the babies themselves. And we found, certainly from the one or two babies that got an early diagnosis, the number of intervention activities that baby got into because the diagnosis was huge, and they already exist in the community, but they aren't geared specifically to FAS kids, and they aren't necessarily published as science-based proposals. They're what people are doing for kids that have cerebral palsy, for example, or think they may have cerebral palsy. They just give them a lot of interventions. And these could be easily studied in our community once we had another group of babies coming through.
All right, any other?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment just about the prevention. Given, again, the overriding issue that we have is that any project which is going to go into CFAS really has to be integrative with other activities involved. There has to be the justification that it's being done through CFAS because there is something to be gained by working through the network. I'm not sure that we're going to have any prevention study. I don't mean an intervention study. I mean a primary prevention rather than a secondary prevention, as Ann was just talking about. Secondary preventions, of course, that's what we would expect to get out of the neurodevelopmental phenotype. But primary prevention, it's hard for me to see how that could be integrated into this activity, particularly since there is a fairly large grant that Phil May either has or will be getting or will be awarded very shortly. He also has the prevention project, which is ongoing in the Northern Plains. Given those, we may be able to take advantage of those. And again, if he was on, we could have the conversation with him. But without that, I really don't know what, at this stage, what can be incorporated. And my hunch is nothing is going to be incorporated in that direction. But I do think interventions are critical. And and that's the reason for the CFAS in the first place. So people should be thinking about that for sure.
Well, I think...
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I think that as our meeting in July comes closer, that we really need to start formulating the questions that we're going to be asking for specific projects in the renewal and themes that the consortium should be taking, addressing new people, new ideas to bring into the consortium, which I think we really need to spend some more emphasis on.
Right.
That came up, I think, in the previous reviews of, well, what have you done to bring new people into the field? And in our case, it hasn't been all that much. I mean, most of the people involved were involved previously. So we need to address that in the renewal. So if people can start to formulate and be willing to present what they're planning specifically in the renewal, or more specifically in the renewal, that would be great. And I've been encouraged to see that people who have ideas have been contacting people who have access to populations where they might carry out those ideas. And Anne's one of them. There have been some other attempts. So I think that that's what we need to do, because you're going to have to sell this project in terms of its interrelatedness to other projects, not every other project, but some other projects within the consortium. Otherwise, it's not going to probably fare as well.
Hey, Ed.
Yeah.
This is Andy Aronson. I want to put a call out there for as people are thinking about how they want to collaborate, that from the informatics core, we're very interested in understanding, you know, what data is going to be, you know, people are thinking about collecting and how they're thinking of bringing it together and what we might be able to do to help that. You know, when it comes to collaborating, that's our job to help make that happen. So please keep us involved.
Okay. And
Ed, I had another suggestion. Do you think there'd be any value of those of us that will be at the study group meeting having a brief discussion?
I think that'll happen.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it'll happen. I think the timing was what was keeping us from doing it, Ann. But maybe we could meet at night on after the study group, but before the reception, or whatever.
The problem is us NIAAA commuters. We're not staying around to the night.
Okay. Well, maybe on Saturday morning we can try to.
But be careful about too early. Us NIAAA commuters are not going to be getting there early.
Okay. And because it's a very busy meeting for lots of people who are involved in this consortium, and that's one reason we decided not to have the consortium meeting at the RSA.
Right.
But I think that we will try, and I will be around for most of the week, so of the RSA meeting. Michael will be there the whole time, and hopefully a couple days afterwards to rest. But, you know, we can certainly discuss it in small groups and informally and try to come up with a more formal time to meet as well. I would encourage people to talk to each other about their projects. I would encourage people to try to get papers submitted, since that I think would help tremendously in showing the utility of this consortium and to publish between sites, so that different investigators from the different projects are involved. And I think that we can do that in the area of the dysmorphology and the facial imaging, the computerized analysis of that. And then I think if we had the behavioral data, we could try to link some of that stuff up with the behavior. I mean, I saw Ken's abstract on papyral fissure size and frontal lobe volumes, I think it was. It wasn't it? Not volumes, but on IQ.
Right.
And head circumference, I'm sorry. And I think that we could maybe really then interrelate projects if we could integrate those data with the behavioral data and get everybody involved. I think that would be a real plus and an important finding. So publish. You know, Charlie's willing to look at articles as a group from us. There was a lot of discussion about that, and then it kindly just dropped off. And so any other final comments in the last couple minutes?
This is Andy. I'm going to be arriving in Baltimore Friday, and I'll be there through Saturday night in case there is anybody who wants a firsthand tour of what the software we've built does.
Okay. And I'll just try to talk to people when I'm there. I'm going to be there, probably getting there at about 10:30 or 11 on the first day, and hopefully staying around till about 5. But maybe we'll be able to go ahead and at various times in the days that I manage to get up to Baltimore, be able to talk with anyone who's there.
Are you talking Saturday or Sunday?
I'm presenting on Saturday.
Saturday, okay.
Right, on Saturday. I think it's 11 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Ed?
Yes?
Is there any information about when the alcohol exposure, those four questions, are going to be added to the database?
Sarah, Tina?
That's me. We have not received any data from any site except for San Diego and partial data from Finland.
How can we move this along? Because we're sort of stuck. We can't publish without this data.
I agree. I think people need to send their data in.
Elizabeth, I'll do whatever I can to help, but we send out emails and we don't get responses back. So, you know, or we get responses back saying, well, you should have been able to figure this out from what we already sent you. So. Let me know what you want me to do, and I'll try to do it.
This is just a final, I mean, another comment that doesn't relate to the question that was just raised, but I did have a long discussion yesterday with Phil May about a possible collaboration, and that's the timing isn't really good, but he thinks in about a year, you know, he'll have that study kind of up and running and be able to, you know, then would be very interested in a collaboration. But it's hard to see how to actually write that into a proposal that's going to be ready in December. So I don't quite know how to proceed on that, but maybe.
Well, you can always write a proposal subsequent to the renewal and ask that it be included in the consortium if it's funded.
Can't you also write a proposal to start at a later, not in the first year?
Yeah, but if you don't have the data,
I mean,
you could do that, Ann. I mean, you can.
But what was it that you said before, write a proposal, I didn't quite catch that.
Write an RO1 subsequent to anything that happens to this consortium. And if it's funded, then ask that it be moved into the consortium.
I see.
All right. Or, you know, the other thing is that we could consider is, besides pilot projects, developmental projects, which would be 3 years of funding at lower amounts of money that people could put in. And you could ask for years 7, 8, 9, for example, rather than years 5 through 9.
Uh-huh.
So that's another possibility.
Uh-huh.
All righty. Well, I thank you all for participating. Michael, any final comments?
No comments. It sounds like we're on track and that we'll probably get a lot of this work done in July.
Joke. All right. We're going to try to keep the presentations of each project to a minimum so that we have more time to discuss what we're going to really put in. So if you could think of, like, your key highlights of what you've accomplished over the last 4 or 3 years, and, you know, a couple bullets, and then here's where I want to move this forward to. That would be what we're looking for. All right?
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.